Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Something Wicked Presents, where we feature audio versions of select stories from our quarterly horror publication, Something Wicked. Tonight's story is about things that crawl in the night, and it is called Nighttime is A-Coming by Verna Pretorius, and is read by Joe Vaz.
Nighttime is A-Coming by Verna Pretorius. Damon sits down next to me. He's on his sixth pint. I'm on my third. We're at the Long Street Cafe. It is 6 o'clock and a typically chill August wind is gusting outside. We sit next to each other, shoulder to shoulder, our noses almost touching the pane of glass before us. There are spots on it. Could do with a wash. Damon beats out a rhythm on the wooden counter before him, then swears as some of his beer spills. Then he is quiet. We watch passers-by passing by in silence for a while, happy to be in the cozy warmth inside the bar rather than in transit, on our way somewhere, out there in the harsh weather. But then, we will be on our way, before long. But for now we are delaying, biding, as time slips out there, as dusk slowly settles, as the hours of the sun go by. "You might want to go easy on those," I say, nodding towards his beer. To himself. Damon's nerves are still a little shaken, his speech a little slurred as he thrums his fingers on the counter again and says, "What do you think this is? Oak? Mahogany?" "Varnished pine, I guess." "Can't be pine. It's sturdy. Good wood. Can't be pine." He thumps his fist on it to prove the point. The whole counter wobbles. The wood, she is not sturdy. She is not good. But I let it go. It's a rattled voice washing around in the current of the alcohol, and I'm not going to get into an argument about what the bar's made of. So, conversation dries up again. People pass, we sit. Damon taps a cigarette from his packet and rolls it around in his fingers for a while. "He looked a bit like Arno Carstens," Damon says. "Jesus, man, don't say shit like that." I had thought I was done, but now I need another mouthful of beer. I end up draining most of what's left. "No, I'm serious. Angular chin, blonde hair. If I'd met him in the street instead of..." "Drink up," I say. "We're getting out of here." "Relax, Shane." Damon puts his hand on my leg, stays me. "There's still time." He turns his face to me, cocks his head sideways. A cigarette dangles between his lips. I reach into the breast pocket of my shirt, produce my Zippo, and hold out a flame for him. "Thanks, light of my life."
"Great." Damon is pissed, out of his mind. "Last night was the night of your life."
I flicked the Zippo closed, put it away. "That was something, wasn't it? I've been doing this a while, but I've never seen that." I give up trying to change the subject. It seems it'll find its way there regardless of any intervention on my part. Damon burps, a horrid sound that reminds me of heartburn. The sky outside, the bit visible behind Table Mountain, is turning purple. The orange of half an hour ago is no more. A nervous crab of fear tickles down my spine. I finish what is left of my drink. It seems no matter how long you've been doing this, how good you get at it, however confident you become, there is always once. Always that one time that will remind you that child's play is not exactly the par for the course. It is for the most part, to be honest. The last couple of months have been good to Damon and me, and therefore the last couple of months have been bad for us. Complacency sets in, and you subconsciously begin to suspect that you've got the hang of this, that you've damn well cracked the code. "We have this shit down, man," I remember Damon saying only a couple of days ago. Coming from London, I've always imagined Cape Town must seem rather run-of-the-mill to Damon. It had begun to seem that way to me, too, of late. Damon had come here all jock straps and brawn, introduced himself to me over a pint of Guinness in the Dubliner, next door from where we now sit, and said, "The fucking Irish," like I was supposed to know what he meant. The UK, for me, was an island, a dot on a map, where they sold fish and chips, implored God to save their queen, and could lay claim to having spawned the majority of the members of Monty Python. Double-decker buses and red phone booths I had seen on postcards and on the covers of travel guides. And then, into my life, thanks to a mutual acquaintance, stepped this guy, Damon Swift. Leather pants, leather jacket adorned with silver chains, thick-soled biker boots, Union Jack t-shirts wearing, skinhead Damon fucking Swift. And this guy made my eyebrows stand on end with the stories he told of that city which hugged the Thames. City needed a change of scene. City decided on the top British tourist destination, like he came for a holiday. Snap some pictures to take home to Brighton.
He wanted a partner, someone who knew the local scene, the ins and outs, the where they goes, the flavors of the month. And that, naturally, meant me, Shane Irvitz. We went around together. We moved into my flat in Clove Street. We went to the waterfront, ate at the Fisherman's Pride. We even went up the goddamn mountain. In my car, on our first night, he leafed through my CD carry pack. "So which one of these are any good?" he asked. "Most all of them," I'd said, it being my music and all. "I mean, for hunting," he'd laughed. "How on earth should I know?" my answer to that. He eventually decided on Springbok Nude Girls. The local flavor was what he was after. "These wankers aren't half bad," he'd said. "We should go see them when they have a gig." Only that was never going to happen, since the nudies had broken up. Only then, Arno Carstens brings out a new album, and suddenly he's on tour and coming to Cape Town. And I make the mistake of pointing that out, and we end up going to watch him. It's a sad day when you get sick of your favorites, but that's what Damon did for me. Night after night, time upon time, Nude Girls, like it was our soundtrack. I started hiding the CDs, but he forced me to turn back, drive home, and get them. Said it put him off not having it. Now he'd got used to it. So Nude Girls it was, every time. But Cape Town, with the sea and the mountain, was a holiday. Until last night, that is. Last night. On two separate occasions, Damon and I had come within an inch of our lives, and suddenly Cape Town did not seem demure to me anymore. Now, his stories from London sounded meager, British tanless pale in comparison. And the thing is, he did look like Arno Carstens. That was the unsettling thing that lingered today. He looked every bit like our quasi-famous turning sentimental rock star. "So what do we do now?" I ask. "What do you think?" "I think we take a lie down, we think things through, collect ourselves." "Collect ourselves?" Damon blows smoke straight in my face. "Oh, there's some ball bearings rattling round up there," he points his smoke at my head. "Are you out of your brackets?" I supply the local equivalent. "We don't lie down. This bastard's vicious. Would you like to hand to him the element of surprise? Probably the only thing we got counting in our favor with the likes of him." "I'd like to be prepared." "You'll never be more prepared than you are now. All that shit happens in a moment. A most appropriate response to that specific, and might I add unique, encounter is all you can hope for. It's not like there's a training school for guys like us." All right, I'm trying to keep the agitation out of my voice, succeeding admirably too. "So, what do you suggest we do?"
"C-point," Damon says, suddenly all in the know.
"Why C-point? Well, he's not going to come back here two nights in a row, is he? He knows we're onto him, and however vicious he might be, his pockmarked fucking ass was close to fried last night." "I appreciate the bravado, Damon, but this one's cunning. Storming around with our pants around our ankles is only going to get our dicks chopped off. You think that's what I'm doing? It sounds to you like after what you saw, like that's what I'm doing?"
I keep quiet. Somehow this has all turned upside down, and I'm the one considering going for another pint. "Let's get moving." Damon gets up. He drains his beer, his Adam's apple bobbing, accepting the liquid. Then he slams the empty glass down on the table, crosses his eyes comically and says, "Let's go make it known to Daddy's little blue eyes that we're coming for his ass." He storms out with purpose, all his British machismo evident in his stride, his long leather coat flapping in the cold wind. I get up more gingerly, nursing the gash in my side that still dribbles red through the clinic's bandages now and again. We reach the Corolla that's parked on Upper Long. I open the boot, we strap on the samurai blades, and I'm aware while we do this, as I so often am, that passers-by must think we're taking the whole Kill Bill thing a little too far. If they only knew. We each take out a wooden stake, solid ones, made from good wood. We get in, and I light another cigarette for Damon. He drags on it, and our drive to Sea Point is a quiet one. We park along the promenade, watch the final bit of the sun's curve slip behind the Atlantic. We both smoke, and we don't talk. We're lost in our own thoughts. The alcohol in our veins is now a distant memory. Our heads are clear. Nighttime is a-coming.
And that's all from this episode of Something Wicked Presents. Log on to the site for more tales from Something Wicked at somethingwicked.co.za. Till next time, good night and good luck.